After a week of threats, the White House announced a series of cruise missile strikes against Syria late last Friday. The strikes are a response to Syrian President Bashar al-Assad's suspected use of chemical weapons earlier this month in an attack that's estimated to have killed around 70 people in a suburb of Damascus. In an address to the country Friday night, President Trump said the U.S. would not ignore what he called atrocities.
The evil and the despicable attack left mothers and fathers, infants and children, thrashing in pain and gasping for air. These are not the actions of a man. They are crimes of a monster instead.
Nahal Tusi is a foreign affairs correspondent at Politico. Nahal, welcome back to Central Time.
Thanks for having me.
Well, Nahal, can you talk about the scope of this missile strike involving the U.S., France, and the U.K.? How big an attack was this?
Basically, it was just over 100 missiles striking three different targets, a scientific research center outside Damascus, a chemical weapons facility west of Homs, and an equipment and storage facility and command post elsewhere. It was a bigger attack than what the U.S. did last year, when the U.S. sent 59 cruise missiles to damage an air base that Assad has in Syria. But at the same time, it was still overall pretty restrained, considering the damage U.S. forces could have done to Assad's arsenal and his conventional weapons capabilities as well.
And what has the Pentagon and the White House said about the goals of this particular attack?
Well, they say that they're trying to send a signal that chemical weapons use is unacceptable, that it's a red line that Assad must not cross. But they also, are very clear that this is not about trying to oust Assad. It's not about regime change, that sort of thing, and that the focus of the U.S. remains fighting ISIS in Syria.
What have we heard in response from Syria, from Iran, and from Russia?
Well, the Russians have had a lot of bluster. I mean, they've promised that there's going to be, quote-unquote, consequences for the U.S. They say that there wasn't even enough evidence that a chemical attack even happened. But from what we're hearing on the ground, Assad and himself doesn't seem to be too miffed by this. In fact, if anything, he's pretty happy that it was restrained. What we'll likely see is that he'll resume the pattern that he did last year, which is when he basically stopped using chemical weapons for a while, but then he might use them again.
And you mentioned that these strikes were not targeted at regime change here. Is there any remaining prospect of regime change, of Assad not ending up in power in Syria?
Right now it definitely seems like, with the backing of the Iranians and the Russians, that he has the upper hand. The group that he attacked in Douma, they were one of the last rebel-held strongholds in the country, really. He looks like he's going to be in power for a while, unless, of course, he has, some sort of heart attack or something, and then who knows what will happen.
Is there any indication that this kind of strike might actually deter Assad and his regime from using chemical weapons?
Last year it clearly didn't. I think the thing with Assad is he tends to use these weapons when it's sort of a situation where nothing else seems to be working in terms of conventional weapons. So when he's facing a particular group of rebels and they're just not giving up in the face of conventional weapons, he'll turn to chemical weapons. I don't see any reason to think that this won't happen again.
Talking to Nahal Tusi, foreign affairs correspondent for Politico, looking at the missile strikes against Syria and targeting chemical weapons facilities in particular over the weekend. Nahal, bigger picture, not long before this, President Trump had talked about withdrawing remaining U.S. troops from Syria. Now we have these strikes after the chemical weapons attack. Is there a sense that the United States has a strategy, a plan for what it wants to do in Syria?
Well, to be honest, sometimes it seems like there's four or five different strategies coming out of the Trump administration. It's hard to tell what the actual plan or long-term goal really is, especially when something like a chemical attack happens and it scrambles the calculus. Overall, I would say the administration does still remain focused on defeating the Islamic State. But when these types of things happen and the president sees children being gassed to death, it does upset him, and so he does want to make a statement, the chemical weapons aren't allowed. But, you know, generally speaking, you know, people have different points of view on what should happen. There's also a concern from Israel and other U.S. allies that if the U.S. leaves Syria, that'll leave a vacuum for Iran to fill. And so you've seen U.S. allies like Israel asked the president to at least leave some forces in Syria to try to stabilize the country and to prevent Iran from having even more influence there.
There have been concerns raised in the United States and around the world about whether these missile strikes were legal under international law. Huge question. We could spend hours on that. Can you talk about some of the concerns people are raising, though?
Look, you know, international law, it's one of those things where, like, it only matters if you believe in it. And, you know, the U.S. sometimes has stood up for that, and other times it doesn't feel like international law applies to the U.S. I mean, the U.S., you know, doesn't want its soldiers to be subject to the International Criminal Court, for example. So, you know, it's an academic question to a large degree. There are some scholars who say that the president has inherent war powers to where he could have, he took out these attacks on the strikes recently under those powers, and that he didn't even necessarily have to tell Congress ahead of time. So, look, again, it's one of those things where until everybody agrees that they want to adhere to a certain set of international rules, that it's just not going to matter that much when people have different definitions of what and when they want to agree to those rules.
You've been following the confirmation hearings for Mike Pompeo, the Secretary of State designate, going before the Senate recently. He would be an important figure to have in place for a Syria policy. Where does he fit in?
You know, he has basically not really said that much. I think he would on Syria, even during the hearing the other day, was not a huge part of it. He basically said that the U.S. has to look at its options, and of course that, you know, fighting the Islamic State is the top priority. But he seems to basically be following the president's lead and the Pentagon's lead on this particular issue.
I want to also talk about Nikki Haley, ambassador to the United Nations. She had talked about sanctions targeting Russians related, I think, to the Syrian chemical weapons attack. The Trump administration said, nope, she got out ahead of things. We're not actually doing that. Well, what happened there?
Well, according to our reporting, the president had not fully signed off on those sanctions before Nikki Haley announced them. But others have reported that, you know, that there had been a decision made and that Trump at the last minute, you know, was said, no, I don't think it's a good idea to do this, because he has always had reservations about getting tough on Russia in particular areas and the timing of that. So there's some muddled reports out there about exactly what happened, but it doesn't really bode well for Nikki Haley's relationship with President Trump if she did get out ahead of him on something so sensitive as Russia.
One more key figure just brought on board, John Bolton, as a national security advisor. Does he have a role in this kind of Syria decision?
Oh, absolutely. And the National Security Advisor would have a huge role. And Bolton is on the right, you know, has said that the U.S. needs to deal a ruinous blow to Assad. But the thing is, this was like his first week on the job, and Jim Mattis, the defense secretary, really did not want to go as far as Bolton would have liked to go. And it was clear that Bolton perhaps thought, for now at least, he should defer to Mattis. And I don't know that that's going to continue in the future, but for now it seems that the Pentagon has the advantage on this issue.
And Nihal, what has the administration been saying about possible future strikes if there are future chemical weapons attacks?
Well, the president said that the U.S. is, quote, prepared to sustain such a response. So that suggests that if Bashar Assad engages in future chemical strikes, that the U.S. will once again respond. Now, you know, just to be clear, like, Assad has carried out multiple chemical strikes since a year ago. They've just been on a smaller scale. This past one was rather large. So we could see small-scale attacks in the future that the U.S. doesn't do anything about, at least militarily. But it's often about how big it is and how many people die before it gets the president's attention.
We'll leave it there for now. Nihal, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
That's Nihal Tusi, foreign affairs correspondent at Politico. She was with us to talk about last week's missile strikes in Syria in response to an alleged chemical weapons attack by the regime there, and what's next for the U.S. response.